Welcome to the Random Article Horoscope for Thursday, the 17th of August, 2018, where we use the proven science of astrology to divine your future, your past, your food allergies, your social security number, your deepest regret, the names of your childhood friends, your shoe size, which parts of you are most ticklish, the color of your bones, every message that you've written but not sent, which animal you'd be if you were an animal, the secret names you gave your lovers, your preferred brand of margarine. At this horoscope, we encode all of this data, all this secret information, and we burn it onto floppy disks, and we package it up into small brown boxes wrapped in paper, and we post it to the National Security Agency in return for Bitcoin. And it's the most sophisticated data mining operation in history. Horoscopy is the secret intelligence agency watching you when you're sure you're not being watched. And you know, it's pretty great. So today we are starting with Aries. Aries, on Thursday morning, you're going to wake up on a train. You didn't go to sleep on a train. Yet here you are. It's an old train, one of those nice wood-paneled ones with the red leather seats. You sit up and no one else is in the carriage. You look out the window, but the window's all frosted. Fogged, like lenses with cataracts. You can't see out of it. So you look around the carriage and you say, hello, is anyone here? And all you can hear is the clacking of the wheels on the tracks below you. You can feel the texture of it under your feet. And you sit there for like 5-10 minutes looking around until eventually a figure comes across from another carriage, a hooded figure in a trench coat with a hood on it, because trenches coats have hoods, and the figure walks up to you, marches right up and points and says, you're awake. And you say, what's going on? I didn't go to sleep on a train. What's happening? Can you help me? But he says, no, listen, this is important. You have to kill the driver. And you say, what's the figure presses an object into your hands, a heavy metal, and you realize it's a gun. You've never held a gun before. It's a .38 revolver, a heavy, rusted iron. And the person says, you have to kill the driver. Go. It's the only way out. And so you move into the next carriage. You carry this gun, and you need to find the driver. And this next carriage, it's dark in this one. It's strange and it's dark. That you can feel shapes moving around in the darkness of the carriage, but you can't see anything. There's some strange creature inside here, and you creep through the dark carriage while the tracks rumble beneath your toes. And you feel the weight of this gun, and all you can do is keep on moving forward, and something brushes up against your leg, and so you just run, you just sprint through this dark carriage, and you keep moving through, and you move on to the next carriage, and this carriage is wet. There's water up to your ankles in this train carriage, sloshing back into the next carriage as you move on through. And your feet get wet, and this black, acrid water is splashing up as you trudge your way through this train carriage. And you're looking out the windows, you're trying to work out where you are, but you can't see what's going on. And you keep on moving, and in the next carriage, there's a bright light. There's a glowing orb in the middle of the carriage, this slowly rotating orb. It's like a moon or a sun, and it rotates and it turns towards you, and there's a face on the orb, and it shouts at you and it says, "You have to kill the driver. You have to kill the driver." And so you hold the weight of the gun and you move on through to the next carriage. And in this carriage, it's all bugs. There's insects and centipedes and beetles crawling over every surface. No seats. This is like a tunnel. It's like a rounded train tunnel inside a train carriage, just covered of bugs and spiders and spider webs. And you have to creep on through and brush the spider webs out of your eyes and brush the bugs off the back of you. And in the next one, there's just infants. Like, there's just a whole bunch of baby children just on the ground, just crying and screaming, and all you can do is just run on through the carriage and make it to the next one. And you keep on moving. The next one has grass growing from the bottom of the carriage, wheat fields and corn and all these grains growing from the floor of the train carriage, and you brush through the corn to move on to the next one. And you journey through dozens and dozens of these carriages, and you understand nothing until finally you get to what must be the front carriage. This door must hold the driver. When you can get to the other side, surely this person behind this door must be responsible for this whole journey you've gone through. All the horrible and wonderful things that you've seen all must stem from the driver. You know that confronting this individual will finally give clarity and meaning and a purpose to this journey you've been on. And you kick down the door and you swing this gun that you barely know how to use around. And you shout, "Driver, driver," you know that you must kill the driver, and you kick it down. And you move on to the next carriage. And it's the same carriage you woke up in. You've just woken up where you started. It's this train. It's not just a straight line. This train is a circle. This train is a loop. There's no front of the train, there's no back, it's an Ouroboros. This train can switch itself. Whoa, that was too loud. And you look for the driver. You look for the driver, and all you see is that man in the trench coat who gave you the gun. And you say, "Where's the driver? Are you the driver?" And the man in the trench coat says, "No. No, I'm not the driver. You're the driver." Taurus, you have lupus. Gemini, I've got bad news, Gemini. Your partner, the one you love, is going to die on Thursday, the 17th of August. You're going to have a funeral. Your family and theirs will gather together. You'll say the words. You'll speak a eulogy. And none of it will feel real. Like, you believe that when you go back home, you're going to find them just as they were yesterday. You know that they can't disappear. You don't know what life would look like without them. It's impossible for you to mourn because you can't imagine their absence. There's no way this is real. There's no way. But you go back home, and they're not there. part of you begins to understand that your partner somewhere is under the ground, in the earth, becoming part of the soil. The mother of your partner, you saw at the funeral, and she was a blessing. She kind of ran the whole thing. She didn't know how to handle, you know, the logistics, the funeral parlor, the coffin buying, the arrangements. The mother, she kind of looked after a lot of that stuff. And at the end of the funeral, she pressed into your hands a seed. And she told you to bury it in the backyard and water it every day, and that that will give you comfort. So you do as the mother says. You go back and you plant this tree. And in the months and years to come, the only constant after the absence of your partner is this plant, as it grows from a seedling to a sapling to a tree, about as tall as you, almost your exact height, this plant. It's a weird plant, you don't know what kind it is. It's got these dark, thick leaves, almost like a succulent, a rich, dark green. And some five years after planting this tree, it begins to bear fruit. These weird, tumorous growths appear at the end of its branches. These swollen green fruits that grow and grow as you water it each day. They're all different shapes. It's nothing consistent. You've never seen any plant like it. You talk to a herbologist friend, but they can't identify this thing. And one day one of the fruits starts developing into something familiar. It becomes this elongated shape with a whole bunch of protuberances at the end. Five growths at the end of this long piece, and it looks kind of like an arm. And then there's another piece that's like a torso with hips at the end, this large green fruit. All of these pieces start emerging, growing from the tree, and you collect them as they come off piece by piece. One small piece is an ear, another a nose, a leg. These are human body parts rendered in heavy green fruit. And without even quite thinking about it, over the weeks you start to piece them together. You place this head shape upon the shoulders and these arms and legs in their proper place, and it all seems to fit together like it was meant to. Eventually you have an almost complete human shape sitting in your living room, these green fruits ripening. The last two pieces that grow on the fruit are two perfect small orbs like grapes. And you realize that they're eyes. When you place them on the head, you press them into the fruit. And you realize what you've done. You've reconstructed your dead partner. It looks just like them. You recognize the shape of their ears, the texture of their skin, the way their hips sit upon their legs. This is your dead partner. They've gone into the earth and grown back up into the tree. And once reassembled, it stands up and looks at you. And it starts to speak. Cancer. You get a new job. You feel like it's time for a career change. So you look onto the classifieds paper at your local town, and you see what's available, and you see a delivery job. All you need is a bicycle or a car, and you'll be able to take packages around your city, a whole bunch of different places. They don't specify what the packages contain, which in hindsight was pretty suspicious. But you take the job anyway, you go to this office. Well, actually, it's not really an office. It looks more residential. There's this older gentleman who seems to live in this so-called office. And this man, every week, gives you a package and an address. And all you need to do is carry the package to the address. And after a few months of this, you start to get a bit suspicious. You're like, okay, is this drugs? Am I a drug mule? Am I okay with that? It does all seem suspicious. The people who you give the package to, I mean, they seem kind of ordinary. Nice people. A bunch of different neighborhoods. Richer people, poorer people, older people, younger people. You can't quite see a pattern in the recipients of these packages. They don't seem like suspicious or unusual or even drug-inclined people. This is a whole range of... You don't understand what this business is. Although, you never ask the man either. But increasingly you get curious. Because the man says, okay, I need you to start performing another job, another part of the job. I used to have another person who did this, but they've left, and so I need you to take over this additional responsibility. As well as delivering these packages each week, I need you to pick me up each week. I need you to take your car or your motorbike or whatever and pick me up from a different place every week. Every week after delivering the package, you have to go to an address and pick the man up, your employer, and you realize that the address that he gives you each week to pick him up and take him back home is the same address you delivered the package to the previous day. Every week you go and deliver the strange package, and the next day you take your employer back to his home from that same place, and it starts driving you mad. No one can figure out, you don't really ask, it seems wrong to ask. This man seems like a private sort of a person. But one day your curiosity gets the better of you. You deliver a package to a small cottage some miles out from the city center. And the person, the recipient, as usual, is, you know, grateful and pleasant enough. You exchange your courtesies. But you don't leave. You stay and you stake out this house where you delivered the package. This house that you know your employer will want to lift from in a bit. And you stay there overnight. It gets cold. The lights in the city start to turn on as the sun goes down. You watch and you see illuminated through the window as the person in this home goes about their day and eventually goes to bed. But there's still a light on, a low flickering warm light. And you approach this cottage and you look in through the window and you peer in and you see the box, the package that you delivered. And you see, slowly, it starts to shift. It starts to move. It starts to jiggle. Is there an animal inside there? Have you been delivering exotic banned pets? Have you been servicing some puppy farm? Have you been... What is inside? And then a fist bursts out of the package. A fist exits the box, and then another one, and then a leg, a human body starts to emerge from this box. The package seems way too small for a human to be inside, but one body part then another unfolds itself like backwards origami, extending out like some IKEA furniture, like a Casper mattress. This show brought to you by Casper. And this impossibly, this man crawls out of the box, and it's your employer. Your employer crawls out of the package that you just delivered. And you see him, and you know that you're like trespassing in this home, but you see him, and you knock on the window and you say, "Hey, Terrence," because that's his name, "Terrence, what is this? What are you doing? Why have you been having me deliver you to a house every week just for me to take you back from that house? Why do you package fold yourself up into a tiny box over and over, and then you're a contortionist? Like, how did this must be bad for your bones? What's your tendons? Think of your arthritis." And then he says, "Hey, cancer, there's a very simple reason why I do this. There's a very simple reason why over and over I cram myself into a tiny box just to crawl back out again and do it all over again. And you say, "What is it? What is it, Terrence? Why?" And then he says, "For kicks." And then you drive him home. Leo. Leo, you're gonna write a movie. You're gonna write a screenplay, and you're gonna send it off to a Hollywood producer, and improbably, implausibly, the producer not only reads your screenplay, but they turn it into a major motion picture, an award-winning, critical and popular success. All these great actors and actresses are playing in it. And what the movie is it's a sequel to 12 Angry Men, or it's more of a spiritual successor. And it's called 11 Vexed Weasels. And it's a smash hit. And so the producer's like, "We've got to make another one." So you make another one, and you call this one 48 Disgruntled Bison. And that one wins an Academy Award. It's crazy. You got Nicole Kidman playing in it. It's nuts. And then you make another one, and it's a whole franchise, and you call this one 17 Flummoxed Pangolins. And it's great. And then there's just the demand never goes away. People just love this shit. So you make 41 Baffled Penguins, and then you just keep doing it, just one after another. You're churning these out year after year, and you live in the Hollywood lifestyle, and you love the acclaim. You're doing all these interviews, and you're doing the whole press thing, red carpet, rubbing shoulders with the elite. And you make another one called 12 and a half grumpy marmosets. And then you do another one called 88 bewildered teacup piglets. And then you do another one called 105 constipated Dalmatians. And then you do another one called 2 perplexed sausage dogs. And then you do something else, because like fuck it, like how many sequels are you gonna just I mean, you gotta try, and then you do another one, and it's called Journey of the Wild Seahorse. And it's a real flop. Like, no one watches this film. But you got a lot of satisfaction from doing it. And you know, so the sort of indie film circuit enjoyed it. So you consider it a success. And then you go and have a bath. And all in all, it's good career. Virgo, you're going to go to the carnival. You're going to wake up in the carnival. You're going to be wrapped up in a sleeping bag. on a carnival Ferris wheel. That's how you're going to wake up on Thursday the 17th of August, Virgo. You're going to wake up like 40 feet in the air, and it's going to be kind of startling, but you roll with it. You're pretty good at rolling with things. Virgo, you take things in your stride. And so you wake up on the Ferris wheel and you're like, alright, I'm in my PJs. I'm rubbing the sleep out of my eyes, but you know what? I love the carnival, so let's do it. You go and ride the things, and you see the sights, and you go into the haunted mansion, and you eat some cotton candy, and it's a great time. And then you go and see, then you go to your favorite part of the carnival. Whenever you go to a carnival, this is your favorite bit. You go and get a corn dog. You used to get corn dogs all the time at the carnival as a kid, and so this is real nostalgic to you. No carnival visit is complete without a delicious corn dog. And you go up to the corn dog stand and you say, "Good sir, could you please provide me with your finest corned dog? I would like your corniest, most canine confection at once, sir, please. That would be great." And then the carny says, "If you wish to have a corned dog on this day, you must pursue a quest to find the cornest dog, the corniest hound, the most corned of all the doggos. You must find the prime corn dog, the first mover of all corned dogs. You must find the titular, proper noun, all caps, corn dog. The corn dog from which all corn dogs spawn." You think that man created corn dog? No. Corn dogs created man. This is some cosmic level shit. Corn dogs are the axis upon which the universe turns. Corn dogs are the proto molecule that divides and splits meiotically. Corn dogs are the substance which gives mass to the world, and the speed of light is determined by this dog. When you hear the bark of the cornered dog, then, and only then, will you get your corn dog. And so you ask the carny, "Well, where am I going to find the corn dog king? Like, I'm peckish now. Like, is this going to take long?" And he's like, "No, don't worry. It's just to the left, and then down the ways a little, and then into the women's bathroom on the left." And the corn dog is in there. So you go in, you go into this dingy carnival women's bathroom, and it's a bit grotty, as you'd expect. It kind of smells a little, but you sort of go through the cubicles and you sort of unfortunately startle one woman who was reading the newspaper. I don't know why you'd read the newspaper anyway. So you open one of the cubicles, and behind this cubicle door you find not a toilet. You find a portal that smells distinctly like the unmistakable scent of corn dogs cooking, and so you step through this portal, and it's like an open space where gravity doesn't apply. You can feel yourself start to float, not only physically but emotionally. Everything feels right, weightless. You feel like anything's possible in this open space, and you stretch out, and you let your arms reach the heavens, and you smile, and your eyes open wide like you've never opened your eyes before, and you see before you the divine visage, the impossible, beatificent. It's the corned dog. And he looks at you with a face that is both loving and serene, and the corn dog wags its tail, and it says, my child, you've come home at last. This is where it was meant to be. This is what you were designed for. Your purpose from the beginning has led you to this place." And then the corn dog emits a single woof. And for the first time in your life, you feel peace. Libra. You're familiar with the concept of wormholes. Space-time wormholes, STW, as we call them down at the club. The universe is riddled with them. Secret passageways, laneways, alleyways, highways, passages and roads of all kind that crisscross across the cosmos. It can take you anywhere, not only to a place you've never been, but to a time you've never been, to a dimension you've never imagined. Where do you think they come from, Libra? Where do you think these wormholes originate? They weren't just placed here by accident. There's no coincidence that these wormholes exist to take you where you want to go. If you want to take the shortcut round Jupiter to get to the Pleiades, it's not as simple. They were put here, of course, by the worms. The wormholes are made by the worms, the space worms, the intergalactic invertebrates roaming the cosmic compost. These worms were born back when the Earth was young. Back when even hydrogen atoms were considered a pretty new and exciting idea. Back when molecules were but a twinkle in their daddy's eye. Space worms are old. And they're pretty friendly. Like, you can see them hanging around the hexagon on Saturn pretty often. Running laps around the rings. The worms are great. I dated one of them once. They're pretty great. They love, poetry and Nangs. So the space worms, I mean, look, they're pretty great. And all I'm really trying to say, Libra, is that on Thursday, the 17th of August, it's really important that you thank the space worm. Thank the space worm for doing you the courtesy, doing you the solid of boring the wormholes in your universe. Scorpio. Scorpio. You may be in some danger on Thursday. Things might get tricky. You'll be okay so long as you remember, don't trust anyone with attached earlobes. You know how some people have the friendly little dangly earlobes? You know, the free ballers. The free moving floppy flagotty spaghetti earlobes that just hang loose. Anyone with those earlobes that just flop around, that's fine. But anyone with an earlobe that is attached directly to the side of their head, with skin connecting the earlobe. Anyone like that, just run the other direction. Just do whatever you have to do. I don't care if you have to jump out of a moving car. If you encounter anyone with an attached earlobe on Thursday, run. And Scorpio, if you have an attached earlobe, oh, Scorpio. Gods help you, Scorpio. Sagittarius. So, you know Atlas, right? Atlas, the fellow who purportedly holds up the Earth on his back, the old Titan, who's been risking severe spinal injury for untold millennia by hoisting the globe upon his back. You know that concept. Well, I'm sorry to be the one to tell you this, Sagittarius, but it's untrue. Atlas is not a man holding the globe. I mean, what does that even mean, holding the globe? We know how gravity works. It orbits the sun and all that, right? You're a Copernican, you know what's up. No, no, Atlas, don't be ridiculous. Don't make me laugh. You know what the truth is? Atlas is not a man carrying the earth on his back. Atlas is a very friendly guinea pig. A large, brown-colored guinea pig who exists not at the bottom of the earth, whatever, at the center of the earth, where it's really warm and cuddly for the guinea pig. You ever seen a hamster on a wheel? You know those wheels? They love that shit. You know, they scurry along on those wheels and it spins around them, and that's what Atlas the guinea pig does. Atlas the guinea pig, this adorable, cute little guinea, he's running inside the globe, inside the toroid sphere, scrabbling at the hot, molten earth at the core of our world. And he scurries and he runs across the inside of the earth, and that's why it spins. That's why the earth rotates eternally. It spins because of the running, the ceaseless, persistent running of this rodent inside our globe. It's not money that makes the world turn. It's a guinea pig named Atlas in the middle of the world. And Sagittarius, to be frank, this fact is not actually important for your Thursday at all, really. Like, this isn't actually, to be honest, all that relevant. But I just wanted you to know. Like, I just felt like if you knew that, you would have a better Thursday, I felt. So, you know, take it or leave it. Capricorn, you're going to buy a car. Nothing fancy, but your current car's pretty old, and you figure it's time for an upgrade. There's only so many times you can pull over in the middle of the road to fucking fix the left flange gasket. It's a pain. So you buy a new car, and you think it suits you pretty well. But the car dealer, when you buy the car, she says, this car, it's haunted. It's haunted, mate. I don't know if you want this car. Like, you know, my job is to sell you cars, but I am warning you, I'm doing you a solid. This car is haunted. And Capricorn, I mean, you're a skeptic, you're a rationalist, you don't believe in hauntings, let alone in Toyota sedans. So you buy the car anyway. And you drive it home, and you do some shopping, and you go out and you drive your car, and it feels all pretty good. Oh, what day is it? Oh, we've got the day wrong. Alright, all the times I said it was Thursday the 17th, we're actually talking about Friday the 17th. That makes more sense. Alright, sometimes horoscopy is a delicate art, guys. Like, don't worry about it. Alright, we're talking about... So, you're gonna buy this haunted car. And you were skeptical, but you realize that, hang on, this... There is a presence in this car. Like, you can feel it, like a breath on the back of your neck when you're driving around. You can almost hear a voice sometimes. And then one time, while you're filling up the gas, you get back in the car. And you could have sworn that after you finished filling up the car with gas, you heard a quiet burp after filling up the car, as though, the car was satisfied with the meal that you'd... So it's very unsettling. And then just when you're driving back home again, you stop at a red light, turns green, and just before you start accelerating, the car says, "Boo!" And, like, the glove box, like, opens for a moment while it says, "Boo." So, like, the glove box is, like, the mouth of this car, apparently, and you say, like, "Okay, alright, car ghost, I believe that you exist, but is that the best you're gonna do, just like a boo?" Like, is that really, like, the cutting edge in, like, haunting technology at this point? Is that the best you can come up with? Like, is that really the meta at this point? Shouting boo? Can't you come up with something a little more spine-tingling than just shouting... I mean, come on, ghost car. Like, come on. I believe in you. And you give this whole pep talk to your cult. Like, you give all these suggestions on how to scare people better, you know, basics, you know, psychological manipulation. You watch some horror films in the car so the car can, you know, learn from the likes of all these great horror directors. And you really build up the car's confidence and self-esteem. And you really help it develop into a much more skilled and confident haunt. And the car thanks you and says, "Look, great, this has been so huge for me. Like, I feel like you've really given me the tools and the processes in order to really, you know, be my best. And I can't tell you how thankful I am for that. Thank you, Capricorn. Capricorn, thank you." Aquarius, have you ever been to a old church, like a really old cathedral? Like, you know, like a really old cathedral in Europe or somewhere. I'm not talking about none of your American churches. I'm talking about like a proper ancient hundreds of year old cathedrals. Back in the day when gods meant things. Back in the days when, you know, church and state were like, you know, shit you could rely on also. I don't know, I'm told. Look, the point is, you know, churches, old churches, beautiful old stone churches, they have these windows that were made hundreds of years ago. How many windows have you seen that are hundreds of years old? You'll know if you've seen one, because a window that's been up for hundreds and hundreds of years, it's not shaped like a regular window, it's thicker at the bottom. Because glass is, of course, a liquid, a very slow-flowing liquid, which over centuries and centuries, it'll slowly drift and conceal and drip down, just to be subtly shaped different at the bottom. I mean, theoretically, I guess a window would become a puddle after long enough. I'm not a chemist, I'm an astrologer. So the point is that these windows are thick at the bottom. And, you know, it's not really a problem, really, but some people try to adjust for and fix this issue of the glass flowing down by every, you know, hundreds of years or so. They take out the window out of its pane and they flip it 180 degrees, put it upside down, and put it back in the frame so that the thick part is at the top and the thin is at the bottom. And then over the next few hundred years, the thick bit drips and drifts down towards the bottom again, the thin bit, and it equals out a bit. So if you just flip your window every few centuries, that'll keep it evened out. It'll keep it still flowing, still moving, but without ever becoming too much in any one direction. Not that there's anything wrong with being a bit thick at the bottom. That's fine. But the point, Aquarius, is that every now and then you need to look at your life and you need to say, okay, I need to flip this upside down. I need to take my life, turn it upside down so that the thick parts, the heavy parts, the bits with too much weight drift away and start to flow in a different direction. Aquarius, you should consider flipping your window on Friday. Pisces, this is a bit weird. Pisces, you're going to go for what seemed to be a routine medical checkup. You know, just checking all of your valves and getting your blood tested and tasted and just doing all the basic stuff, bopping on your knee to see if it flips back up and, you know, checking, cutting you through the middle to count your rings. Just the usual medical GP checkup. Although this one's a little bit unusual. They perform an unusual test on your blood, a new developed test that's actually never been done before on human people. But your doctor's pretty enthusiastic about it, and you're like, oh, sure, fine, I'll be a medical guinea pig. So your doctor takes your blood, and then they come back with the results. They call you in, actually, for the results a week later, and that's always a bit scary. So you come into the doctor's office, and they say, Pisces. All right, so we did this test that's never been done before, and we found something unusual. And you say, just tell me what's up, doc. Like, I can take it. Like, what did you find in my blood? And the doctor says, well, we used this wholly new technique to sort of break down the molecular structure of your blood and examine the underlying chemistry. You know what we found? You know what we found running through your veins? Kool-Aid. We found Kool-Aid, that beloved sugary beverage. We found Kool-Aid, that cordial drink, running through your veins. And this is terrifying, Pisces. How do humans have Kool-Aid in their body? We'd like to do some more tests. We need to work out what's going on. These doctors systematically analyze every part of your body, and they find that every part of you has Kool-Aid in it. And so they run the test on other people. They're like, okay, we've got to, like, work out what's happening. Maybe the methodology, what's happening. So they test these other people. And every person that they test has Kool-Aid in them. Every person who they do this test on, they find Kool-Aid. They do it to the doctor who administered your test, and this doctor is full of Kool-Aid. Every cell in this doctor's body contains Kool-Aid. How did it get there? They test millions of people all over the world, and every person from every corner of the globe has Kool-Aid inside their bodies, and there's all these theories about, is it some kind of industrial pollutant? Is it something in the water? Is it something in the air? Did the people at Kool-Aid Incorporated somehow, and so they start testing animals, and they all have Kool-Aid in them, and then they go through the fossil record, and they go through these prehistoric animals, they examine the coelacanth, a fish that hasn't evolved, that's a swimming fossil from millennia ago, and it's got Kool-Aid in it, and they go to the moon, and they take soil samples in Mars, and they found that it's all full of Kool-Aid. Every atom in the universe, it has the Kool-Aid in it, and people keep asking, like, at what point did we all drink the Kool-Aid? At what point did everyone accept this state? At what point did everyone become like this? There must have been a moment, but the more we dig through time and space, we realize that it's universal. This isn't something that we became. This isn't something that we can find the cause of. We were always like this, Pisces. Since the beginning, and we couldn't have been any other way. Ophiuchus. Ophiuchus, on Friday, you're going to wake up on a stage. It's a large auditorium with, like, multiple decks of people out in the crowd. Beautiful old stage, really, but you are pretty concerned to wake up there. You don't remember falling asleep on a stage, but you wake up on a stage. And there's all these people out there looking at you. And they all say, hey, Ophiuchus, dance. Dance for us. And you say, what is going, I just woke up, who are all, and they say, dance, and they're very impassioned in their demands. They're demanding that you dance. His music comes on, and you're like, well, I mean, fuck it, all right. And you do a little jig, you know, you shake your booty, like, you know how to do this shit, and, you know, so you go for it, and for, like, you know, a good 20 minutes, you're just rocking it, and you almost start to enjoy it. And you're just dancing, and, like, it's pretty weird, like, you don't really understand what's going on. They go through all these different music styles. There's a bit of, like, trashy, like, techno, and then some, like, classical, and you're rocking it, honestly, like, you're having a good time. And then the crowd, this whole time, is just enraptured, and people are, like, shouting, and, like, cheering, and jeering, and booing, and there's all this It's a whole sea of people who are just going for it. There's all this stuff going on in the crowd, actually. Like, some people, like, fight, and some people, like, love, and some people, like, there's a lot going on. Like, people are chatting and moving and forming these groups and changing, and there's all this stuff going on in the crowd. And then suddenly they all stop. Everyone stops, the music stops, and you sort of just awkwardly stop dancing mid-move, and everyone in the crowd who had been, like, doing all these things, you know, in intense conversation and standing and sitting, all of them uniformly stand up, look to the front of the stage, bow deeply. And then these roses and things are being thrown at them, and there's all this celebration and clapping from somewhere, and then all these people in the crowd they bow and they smile, and then they go back out of the stands, and then the curtain drops, and the curtain doesn't drop in front of you, the curtain drops in front of them, the red curtain, and you're like, hang on, am I on the stage, or was that the stage? The crowd, wait, they were performing that whole time. I think I was the audience. You're the audience of Fire Kiss. All along, you thought you were performing, but it was the crowd of Fire Kiss. So all you should do is sit back and enjoy the show. Thank you for listening to this episode of the Random Article Horoscope for Friday the 17th of August 2018. If you would like to hear more of this show, let us know. It would be nice to have this show as a podcast instead of a YouTube video. So if and when we hit, like, I don't know, like 1,000 subs or something, that's probably enough to justify having a podcast feed. So maybe share it around a little if someone you know might enjoy this. But just remember, the most important thing is to heed these warnings and predictions about your future on Friday the 17th of August.